Welcome to Modcast, an official podcast of Politan Civilization site. Tony Keel.
John Archer.
Raph High.
Guest co-host.
Today is Australia's equivalent of the 4th of July.
Oh!
That's right.
Yes, yes.
So you guys like have a queen or... You guys sing Long Live the Queen, or...
Yeah, they have Queen Elizabeth.
That was our national anthem, but we
lost
that national anthem about 30 years ago. Our national anthem is now Advance Australia Fair.
And Waltzing Matilda.
John, how does that song go? How does that song go, John?
Waltzing Matilda, waltzing Matilda, you'll come a waltzing Matilda with me.
That's your national anthem? Oh.
Yeah.
I have to admit, that's a weird national anthem.
Well, it's a very common song. It's not the national anthem.
Oh.
No, the other one really is Advance Australia Fair, but no one knows the words to that, so everyone sings Waltzing Matilda.
Oh, really? Well, that makes sense. Is it because you guys are too drunk off Foster's, or...?
Well,
too drunk to remember your own national anthem?
How do you know our secrets?
Oh, no. Oh, that's funny. That's funny. Oh, guess what? I have a new announcement. I bought a laptop.
Ooh.
I have a laptop now. It is a netbook.
Oh, yes. Like, I got a little one of those little ones. I got a little Asus one.
Yeah, I got the Asus also, the EPC. I love it.
I've got the first original model that came out.
Yeah, I got the 904H.
Yeah, right.
And I love it. I love it. I love it.
Mine's only a little 701 version.
Oh, I'm even able to play. It even runs some 3D games, which tripped me out. I was like, what the hell?
Did it run Civilization?
It doesn't have a disk drive, so I'm trying to get my ISOs in order. So I haven't run it yet, but I will give you guys a heads up when I do. I think it will run Civ at low settings.
Probably. I mean, Civ 4 is, you know, like most Civ games. They're not that graphically hardcore, you know, make your processor blow up type kind of game.
Well, the processors on these is a 1.6 Atom.
Hmm. Yeah, that's much more advanced than my model, Tony, because my one's only got a little Celeron mobile in.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
First generation.
Those ones.
First generation EPC.
Yeah, I didn't want the Celeron. I hate Celeron.
So is there some kind of notebook video card in there that's got some hardware acceleration?
It's got raster acceleration, which means when it accelerates my older games, they have this kind of pixelated look to them. Very minor, but you can kind of see. It's weird. It's weird.
Hmm.
I'll sell you mine to you, Ken, if you like, or something like $700.
Oh, get out of here. I pay, $320 for this fancy one.
Yeah, your computer is probably worth, like, $50 now.
Yeah.
I mean, that's how fast things go. Heck, the computer I'm running on right now, I probably couldn't give away.
Yeah, yeah. And Ken, that means you need to upgrade. How long have I been telling you to upgrade?
Yeah. I know.
Now, Ken, is yours a Pentium 1, is it?
Actually, it's an AMD 64 processor.
Oh, it's not too bad.
Oh, right.
It's not too bad.
The processor is good. It's just a little behind the times, and everything else is totally
behind the times.
We are
just a bunch of geeks, aren't we?
Oh, big time.
We are doing a podcast about gaming. <now.
laughs> About modifying gaming, yeah.
That makes us very geeky. All right, at that. Welcome to Modcast, episode 26. Today, we are joined with Kenneth, Impaler WRG, Ferlin.
Howdy.
Tim, Rough High, Pratt.
G'day, folks.
John, BT Oz, Archer.
G'day, everyone.
And me, Tony Gerzakakil. Hello. With our very, very, very special guest co-host, Gabriella Rye Trabajo.
Hi, everyone. Yeah, kind of. Okay.
Okay, kind of. All right. I'm not too good with the beautiful names that I can't pronounce. So we have probably far too much fun for the average mind to grasp in this episode. So I recommend any of you lesser-minded people to just put wax in your ears, much like the crew of the Odyssey in the ancient Greek tales, to protect you from jumping into the water and drowning in all our fun.
Mm, yeah, so watch the show in short, controlled bursts.
That does help, you know. I mean, just listen to 30 seconds, take a nap, wake up tomorrow, another minute, you might be able to get through there. In about 6 months, you'll be done with the show, and you'll be intact.
And today in the Code Corner, we look at the AI Colosseum Mine by Falcone.
On the artist's sketchpad, we've seen the B-52 made in Iraq by Nathan Smith, and the Locust Battle met by the Coyote.
Today, in the Modder Spotlight, we talk to Rye about his Rise and Fall mods, including a board game mod.
Code Corner, where we discuss SDK and Python mods or any other non-graphical mods in the Civilization 4 modding community.
I have some special present for you, Ken. I acquired some wonderful code that someone sent to me, and I think you already were looking at it a little bit, but it's called the AI Colosseum, and it's by Falcone. And what exactly does this do? I mean, it's some complicated code, I heard.
Yeah, well, it's being distributed as an executable, but what it does is that it takes code you've written for altering certain functions in the AI and will basically cobble it together, finish writing the rest of the necessary code for it, and compile it all, or it'll put it into your code source so you can compile a DLL as normal. And that will allow you to essentially create different AIs, different at the code level, playing against each other in the same game.
Oh.
There's no limit on how many different AIs you can have. It will just simply say there's AI number one, AI number two, AI number three, and it will assign those. Say if you have six AIs in a computer, the first one will be number one, second one number three, third number three, and the fourth one will go one again, yada yada. So it'll just randomly assign the different code type AIs to the actual slots in the game for each AI that's there.
Oh.
So you can actually use this in combination with, say, a autoplay system to test the AIs against each other.
Ah, so this is a great way to make already brutal AIs a little bit more evil?
Yeah, it could give you a more diversity in the way the AIs play against you. It could also allow you to do just testing of, say, an old AI versus a new AI, to say, well, does this new AI beat the other AI?
So this takes it beyond the original, like, integer functions in the Civ XMLs. It adds even more customization
yes.
to it.
Yeah, there had been a team way back that created a system where each AI slot would reference different sets of XML variables for data points in the code, but the code was all essentially the same. It was just using in different factors.
And they're picked randomly, you said?
No, they're not.
Randomly assigned. It's actually just staggered, would be the best way to describe it.
Oh, okay.
He hasn't included any system to allow you to specifically assign, you know, say, I want the Aztecs to be AI type A and the Mayans to be to be type B, or to have all the type A's fight each other or all the type B's.
So this is more for a code perspective to see your AIs in action with autoplay running.
Yeah, that's the concept. I think that's most useful.
Because it will be interesting to try the same game with different AIs, like swapping.
Yeah, but you'd have to recompile under this. So, I mean, say if you had two different types of AI that you assembled in the code, and you just made a game of two AIs playing each other, yeah, you could fight those, see how they battle each other.
Yeah, okay, but
if it's like six or seven, it's kind of a hodgepodge.
How the game develops depends on starting situations and other factors too. So it will be interesting to see the same game with different AIs swapped.
Yeah.
Repeating the game with different AIs and see how it goes compared to the last one. With the same words.
Yeah, if you were to keep the same map. And yeah, so that everything was identical.
But then the AI is different, so you see the results.
Yeah. Well, you can get radically different things because this really breaks it out so that you could rewrite the entire AI almost from scratch. And you could have, like, say, one function where it's like the decide what you do for a unit building function. You could completely rewrite that entire function from scratch. And one AI would use that function and another AI would use a different function for that same choice being made.
Now, will this code compile those custom AIs into an already modified DLL?
No, I think you have to have you have to have an existing source pile, you know, of all the source code you want, and then you're including the custom written functions, and this thing basically puts it all together.
Well, yeah, that's what I was asking. So it does do that. Okay.
Yeah, you can't insert it into an already existing DLL. But it kind of gave me the idea. It's like, wouldn't it be cool or even cooler if the AI itself was a separate DLL that you could compile
Ooh.
And it interfaced with the regular one that's the core of the game? I actually remember hearing about some projects on the internet for other types of games that would actually do things like that. I mean, the AIs would be kind of their own separate module.
Teach the AIs to learn. The next thing you know, you get a message. It'll be like, Ken, we hate you. We know where you live.
We live.
All right. This is an excellent, excellent mod. Ken, what kind of person should download this mod?
This is definitely something for an experienced AI programmer. It's a pretty limited, narrow set of people who would do this. Now that Blake has left the community and is a Buddhist monk, he would have been, you know, right on the top of the list for people who would have been interested in this. But if there are still others working on AIs, of which I believe there are a few, they should definitely have a look at this and see if this is useful for them playing their AIs against each other, that kind of concept.
It's been up on CFC for about 2 months, and it's been downloaded 22 times. it's a small audience, but it's an incredible work.
Yeah,
indeed. Artist Sketchpad, where we discuss graphics and artwork from the Civ modding community. I have a couple delicious pieces of artwork, and you know how I love tasty artwork. It fills my fat belly with wonderfulness. And the first one is from our good, wonderful, wonderful friend. I mean, if he needed a place to live, I would let him stay in my house. Our friend Snafu Smith. Now, Snafu is...
guess what type of model it is?
It's an airplane! It's actually one he's worked on for a while. And if you look at Snafu's latest work, I guess he is back from Iraq. I don't know. But all of them in the corner say made in Iraq, which is hilarious. This is probably the only export that's besides oil that's coming from Iraq, and it's Snafu Smith's model. And we're going to be covering more of these made in Iraq models in the next few episodes. But this one by Snafu is the Boeing B-52 Stratofortress, and he's been working on it a lot because the original version was extremely high poly. It says right down here that it's at 960 polys, down from 2200.
Wow, that's excellent.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it still looks really nice.
It does look nice. And the skin is new. It looks more like the painting of an aircraft sketch or something, so it's got those panels.
It's got a camo finish on it.
It's got a nice camo finish. I think it looks really cool. And, of course, I think the underbelly is painted light blue.
Now, the engine nacelles is what I imagine. I mean, even with the low poly count of 960, the engine nacelles don't look really bad. They're at least hexagonal openings. Now, maybe they have eight-sided, you know, the engine intake, and they look really quite nice.
They do. They look like at least eight for their circumference. And you can see in the upper right corner of the picture, he's got the 3DS Max...
wireframey kind of thing?
Yeah, wireframing. So you can see that it's a lot less polys, but they're very smooth, and the texture just sets it off. And apparently, he has a custom animation for it. I have not loaded this unit, but I will load it when I put it in my mod, but he apparently custom animated it. The texture is from... Is Combat Ace a person, or is that a book?
Oh, Combat Ace?
Yeah, it's a... I'm assuming that might be a
It says Combat Ace Forums.
Oh, okay. So
he picked it up on another forum, I think.
Okay, maybe a Flight Sim forum or something.
Hmm.
But this is Snafu's quoted saying, "This is my way of saying I'm back."
Hmm. Well, I'm hoping that the Blood of Nine mod will soon come out.
I bet you a lot of people want to see that. It's going to be a cool mod.
Yeah.
It's going to be very cool. Das ist großer Geil. But, Yes, Snafu, we love you, man. Come on the show if you're bored. You know, if you're still in Iraq, maybe not, because, you know, there's some security issues since Ken's a terrorist. So
wait a minute. I thought you were the terrorist. Hmm?
Shut up. Shut up, you fool. All right. And I got one more piece of artwork today. And it is, of course, more battle mechs. It is the Locust Light Mech, which is about a 20-ton mech, which is very small. And this mech usually packs two SRM-2s and what, probably a medium laser, maybe even a large laser in the center torso. And it's the mech is used for, it's a support mech that does flanking and fast strikes, so it moves so fast that you have trouble aiming and hitting it. But if that mech ever, like, bumped into something or slowed down, one shot from a heavy mech would probably blast it. And the Locust, of course, is a inner sphere mech, a very old inner sphere mech. And you see here, he's got, what, a dozen skins for it?
At least a dozen.
Yeah.
Hmm. I like, it looks like a Tweety Bird.
Yeah, doesn't it? when you pile it, its turret doesn't even twist. So you can't actually strafe and fire from the side. You have to, like, run fast, line up like a strafing run in a plane, and then veer off. So it is a it is a difficult mech to pilot.
Mm, interesting. The model, it doesn't even look like it has knees to it. What does it actually look like when it's running around?
Well, see, it's got like reverse chicken knees really close away up under those weapon pods. See them?
Okay.
Top right. You can see the sort of knee there. But it looks the middle of the leg looks like a piston. No, a shock absorber.
I bet you that the leg lifts up as it runs, and that's it's this mech was designed for absolute speed. It has no armor to speak of. You know, maybe enough armor to stop, like, someone with a pistol shooting at it, but that's about it.
How many mechs does this give us total that have now been modeled? I mean, it's getting up into the half
dozen. We've done, what, two or three mechs? I don't know.
Oh, come on. We've done, like, 40.
Well, however much we're expecting, you know, Battletech mods are few and far between, but I hope they make it a kind of a mod that's more like, what's that crappy one, Afterworld? So it's actually a tactical, not world-based?
Yeah, tactical. Definitely should be tactical.
Yeah, because that would kind of reflect the board game of Battletech. But if they do a world-based mod, they're going to have to look towards the Battle Force game series, which is, you know, battle mechs at, like, a Civ level. You know what I mean?
Mm.
So
we could mod in the Civ, and this would be your warrior.
Yeah. It very much is a cheap, old-fashioned mech. And I don't know who would want to pilot these. I wouldn't want to. I haven't. It's no fun, because you really have to be good at dodging bullets. And as you can see in the right-hand side of the pictures, there is a picture of it dying. It looks like it's taking a shit of flames out of it. See that?
Reason to Tony to always come up with the most inappropriate thing to say.
Modding Spotlight, where we discuss and examine a particular mod out of the Civ 4 community.
Okay, so let's introduce Ryan a little bit more. People are probably familiar with his mods before.
Yeah.
You've done the Rise and Fall mod for Civilization 3, and then Civilization 4 as well, and a couple of other projects we'll discuss too. Could you tell people at home just a little introduction as to where you live, how you got into starting and modding, and what your day job is, kind of thing?
This is something that's almost changing every day, because last week I moved to the Isle of Elba, right where Napoleon was exiled.
that's just what I was thinking. Is that where they exiled you?
Yeah, and I'm exiled into high school. I'm supposed to teach physics.
Are you? You're a teacher?
Apparently, because nobody ever wants to go to Elba, because it's very annoying to reach it by ferry boat. So they call anyone who wants to go there, and that has a title. Okay, just that graduated.
Oh, so you don't need any kind of teaching experience to just say,
no,
hey.
No, never. I was just put into the class. Okay.
I had a physics teacher like that who was, it was his first year teaching.
The students are yours.
Yeah. It sounds like you got shanghaied. Are you going to be going back to where you lived before ever? Like, are you just a temporary thing for you?
No, I'm trying to stay in Livorno, where I live, as much as possible. And just spend there 4 or 5 days a week. Anyway, the contract will last until June when the school ends. After that, I think again of what to do. Possibly moving abroad.
Oh, well, you can always come to America and hang out with me and Ken in Arizona.
I'd rather... No. I'd rather go to Japan.
Ooh, Japan. That's definitely geekier.
It's like 90 degrees outside right now where I live.
Oh, shut up.
Yeah.
It's only 24 Fahrenheit in New York at the moment.
Well, see, here's the problem. In Arizona, you want winter, and when it's hot in winter, you go... But anyways, what were you doing before you went to teach the classes, right?
Studying. I got the master's, and I've been working for like 10 years in a Chinese deli, in a Chinese restaurant, doing the delivery service at night for dinner with my scooter.
All right. It's really true what they say. It's like, you get that master's degree, and it's like, you want prizes? You know, it's like...
I've been writing for a magazine, for an Italian PC game magazine.
Ooh,
cool.
Because, it all started when they reviewed Ryzen 4, and they asked me to write a guide to modding. And after that, I've been asked to review other kind of mods and board games, too.
Wow. That's really awesome.
Yeah, maybe you can parlay that into a little bit of a game review business, which is in itself a large industry of people who review games.
Yeah, that's the perfect job, because you're paid for playing, no?
Yeah. But you don't actually have to do all the programming. You can just, like, I like this game, or this game sucks. It's just... my opinion. You know?
Well, what might suck is, since playing video games is now your job, everyone eventually hates their job, so you're going to hate playing video games.
Yeah, especially since the hard part is that you must finish the game, or try as hard as you can, as much as you can, to review all aspects of the game.
Yeah.
Well, you see, the thing they do in the industry of, like, a game review is they give the games that they know are going to suck to, like, the new guys, whereas the senior guys get to keep all the games for themselves they know are going to be good. They get to play, like, StarCraft 2, you know, all the goodies, you know. Yeah.
And then Rye has to play all the crappity first-person shooters.
Yeah, like Deer Hunter 25. You know? Now it's personal, you know.
Just to start off our questions, I wanted to ask you, you wanted to talk about a special project you're doing. It's a Rise and Fall for Civilization mod for a board game. So somehow you modded a board game. So what can you tell us a little bit about that, and then we're all going to ask some questions to you.
What can I say? That I bought the board game, Sid Meier's Civilization, the board game. It's called like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I was very disappointed, because it's quite unplayable. It's basically a broken game. I realized this reviewing other games for the magazine, and I realized that game just didn't work, and that's very weird, because if you think about it, Civilization is supposed to be the perfect game to translate port into a board game, since it comes actually from a board game.
Yeah, it comes from a board game.
Yeah. Oh, I played it.
I was going to say, it's the perfect board game to port into computer games, then port back into a board game.
Oh, no, but I've tried to play it about half a dozen times. I've actually played the board game, and I completely agree with you. I think I've only had one game that lasted like 3 days, and as far as we got was like the Middle Ages. And we'd have to leave the table, the board game, we'd have to leave it open on top of a big table with all our pieces on it, so to save it, basically. and it was just, oh, it was a pain in the ass.
Mm.
Yeah, it's, if you play that game, you probably want to get the mod for it.
Yeah, I tried to play that with folks at 4Axis, but they were like, no, let's play Halo 3 instead. And I understand why.
Yeah, they know about it. It's like a $70 board game, too.
Yeah, it's quite expensive. Now I think Eagle Games went bankrupt. So I think it's actually hard to find to buy if anybody wanted to.
Yeah, you have to go on eBay or something.
On eBay, yeah.
It probably would be the only way to get it.
Okay. Now, Rye, what gave you the idea to create your mod Rise and Fall?
Well, actually, I gathered my ideas while working on the alpha test of Civilization 4. While in the session of brainstorming, I kept proposing ideas that came to my mind, like Vassals, or different unique starting dates for civilizations or mercenaries. And a large part clearly was ignored at the time because the project was already in the middle or even quite almost finished. So they were left out. And a few, like Vassals, they were added in an expansion. But when the game was out, I decided that was probably a good idea to put them all together, all the stuff that was left out, and try to do something with it, and in particular to do a sequel of Civ 3, Rise of Civ.
Okay. And Rye, do you work alone on your mod, or do you have others on your team for Rise and Fall?
Yeah, I do work alone. I've always worked alone.
Aww.
Don't know why. I've got more freedom to do what I like.
Yeah.
Creative control.
It's like a dictatorship.
Kind of like this show. Ich muss da eine Podcast schnell.
If you ever look into Rise and Fall forum, sometimes I threaten the mod users to implement more plug if they don't behave like I want.
Well, the one question I had about Rise and Fall of Civilization is, I know there's a lot of comments about if you choose America as your starting civ, you basically need to walk away for 30 minutes while the game gets to America. But if you choose something like the Aztecs, does that civilization die, or do you start straight away? How do you replicate the Aztecs being wiped out by the Spanish?
They're not appearing at the beginning. They're appearing in 12th century, something like that.
The Aztecs? Really?
The Aztecs. Yeah.
Yeah, their civilization doesn't start to rise up to become a large civilization for quite a long time.
They
would have just been hunter-gatherers. So in the game, they don't start at the beginning.
Who's a civ that starts right at the beginning?
The Egyptians, the Chinese.
They actually settled in Mexico around that date, around the 13th century, kind of.
Well, I mean, the Aztecs is a good point, but I mean, the Aztecs, okay, you have to still have to wait for them to start, but the Aztecs basically get wiped out when the Spanish come across from Europe. Does your mod replicate that as well, so you only have a limited lifespan, or is it your civ that you can do what you like and you can still rule the world with the Aztecs?
When the Spanish or any other civilization from the old war comes to America, an event is triggered, a special event, the conquerors. A heap of units is created right next to the coast. To the closest to the plot where the Spanish units have met the Aztecs unit. So if you are the player, you're bound to use those units to take over the Aztec Empire. Otherwise, the AI usually declares war. But since this makes life hard for the Aztecs, they've got easier victory conditions. Like,
okay.
You can win the game just enslaving a certain number of European units.
Ah,
excellent. And very interesting adaptation of into your game.
Thank you.
The mod is available as a bunch of PDF files, which the player prints out on their computer, cuts them out with scissors and paper, yada yada, and these are now gameplay pieces, and there are little rule sheets that allow you to add those in, explaining the new pieces and also changing a great deal of the rules of the older pieces to create a very different game. But I wanted to ask you, how is the creation of that board game mod significantly different from your work in a computer mod? I mean, outside of the fact that it obviously didn't involve a computer. I mean, how is it play style different? How is your impression of a board game and how it should be played different than a computer game? And how does that work into your philosophy of board games? And do you see them as a big part of game
design? It's certainly very different because board games are supposed to be much less complex. There is nothing automated. Like, if you think about Civ, there are a lot of calculations. There's some hidden mechanic that every turn, like calculating the shield, the production of the cities, the food, everything.
Food collection. Yeah.
You can't just bring it to a board game because you will have to do all that manually or with a calculator. It doesn't
that would
make
be boring.
It does. Yeah, it's very boring. And in fact, Sid Meier's Civilization, the board game, does a kind of has a kind of approach. This kind of approach. So games with usually last 2 or 3 days, and after that you stop playing because you just hit the Middle Ages. So what I tried is to fix this broken game, and I didn't want to bring Rise and Fall to the board. I just wanted to make that board game I had in my shelf playable. That was just my purpose. If you think about philosophy, you said, there's a concept that divides games produced in America and European games, and I try to to bring to civilization to the Euro side, because European games are usually supposed to be simpler with smooth mechanics and fun to play, usually not frustrating, and anyone can play easily. You can end the game you can finish a game in 2 or 3 hours, and no one can lose and be excluded from the game. There is little luck involved. On the other hand, American games, sometimes called Ameritrash, there are giant productions. Like if you have ever seen World of Warcraft, the board game. That's a typical, or StarCraft, the board game, even more. They're typical American-style games. They're very impressive from the point of view of the beauty. They got beautiful models, beautiful miniatures, and
material.
Lots of rules. For hardcore gamers, they're certainly more satisfying, but they take like 2, 3, 4 days to play a complete game sometimes, and there are complex manuals. Like StarCraft has got a 50 pages manual, and that, in my opinion, is insane. And moreover, there's a lot of luck involved usually in American games. There are a lot of it's usually called dice fest.
The dice rolling.
So. I try to do this kind of simplification to the game, to civilization, and at the same time, I decided to add a few aspects that could have been interesting but wouldn't increase the complexity. Like from Rise and Fall, a different power for each civ. If you bring it to the board game, it just means that at the beginning of the game, each player picks a civ from I don't remember how many, like 18 or 15. But the game doesn't become more complex that way. It's just one more choice you do at the beginning.
Well, wait, I wanted to say something. I wanted to say I definitely agree with your sentiment on European board games. I got introduced to a lot of the German board games when I was working at Firaxis. You know, so the guy, there's a bunch of board game geeks there. Specifically, Ryan Meyer, he's a big board game geek. And he had, you know, Settlers of Catan. We'd play Settlers of Catan with like four, five, six people at a time. And one called like Puerto Rico and another one called Power Grid. And they were very low chance based games. Almost everything is decision making based. There's very little dice interaction, and the rules do tend to be pretty straightforward, but they're well designed. And that's definitely a good philosophy, I think, to bring to board gaming in general, and game in general, since I think a lot of computer games should be designed on that kind of principle of, like, it is a computerized board game rather than this overly complicated
My friends play the Insane Clown Posse board game, which, which, and if you are any familiar with Juggalos, they're not exactly extremely philosophical in mind, but, that game even takes like 4 or 5 hours to beat. And all you do is run around stealing from each other and murdering each other. I mean, you really hit it on the nose there, Rye, because American games seem to take forever to beat.
Yeah. I think it all comes from Monopoly. I mean, nothing but dice rolling, and it does take forever to play.
I hate Monopoly. My friends play it, and I leave. I leave where they are. I drive home. I can't stand Monopoly.
I really loved Monopoly when I was a kid, but in hindsight now, I do see it is a terrible game.
You should play the communist version of Monopoly.
I don't want to play any version.
That sounds good.
No, basically, when someone puts the hotel on, the government comes along and says, sorry, you can't have a hotel there, takes it off and puts a house on. We were playing Monopoly, and my wife did that to a friend, and my friend's face, like, what? What? Like, you almost had a heart attack. It was so funny.
Sounds like your wife was making up rules.
No, that's the way she always plays.
Oh, that's funny.
When I
play an American board game, I usually, like, if I'm playing Trivial Pursuit, and that means someone physically forced me to play Monopoly or Trivial Pursuit, they actually had to sit me down and hold me down. What I'll usually
do is... eyelids open.
Yeah, basically. But, you know, Trivial Pursuit has the little pies you put in the little counter, the little tiny point score. I'll start putting those in everyone's thing while they're not looking, so I start adding points to their score. So the game will end sooner.
Well, you could accuse them of cheating. Hey, you didn't get that many. It's like,
No. You're missing the whole point.
Oh, okay.
I'm putting them in there so I don't have to f***ing play anymore.
Hey Tony,
yeah.
Have you ever played Risk?
Oh no, Risk.
The board game?
Risk is a whole different story.
Risk is actually good.
Risk is good, but this is the problem with Risk. Most people I know drink alcohol while they play Risk.
Perfect.
And drinking and playing Risk at the same time is worse than driving your car and drinking alcohol.
Why?
Because when you get backstabbed and everyone's all drunk. I've seen people stand up and throw their pieces and nearly punch each other over Risk. Risk is not a safe game. Just don't play it because they're gonna be drunk and they're gonna hit you in the face.
Risk anyway is broken as well because it's potentially infinite.
Yeah,
because
I got a lot of that scenario too.
It's all about dice.
Yeah.
But if you play a game that doesn't include that element of randomness. Isn't there just one ultimate solution that you always play?
Well, then there would only be one game of chess ever played. I mean, obviously, that's not the case.
Technically, there is a perfect game of chess. No one's ever discovered it yet, but, you know, everybody's analyzing, ooh, he's moved the pawn. That means it's the Fenango Dango offense, and that means I've got to use the dipstick defense or something, I don't know.
Well, I have a question for you, Rye, and it's more about the physical properties of your board game mod, And I noticed on the screenshots you had graphics on a lot of the playing pieces and cards, like pictures on them. Did you make those artworks, or did you scan them in, or what?
No, they just come from Civ 3 and 4.
Oh, so you kind of borrowed from actual video games to make
and,
them?
And from Rise and Fall as well, like the Civ flags.
Oh, very nice, very nice. That's really neat. Now, let's see.
Now, Rye, did you ever play any other mods for Civilization before you created your own?
No, I almost never play. Not even my own.
No, modding's busy.
Really, it's weird, but I'm addicted to modding, not to playing.
Yeah, I know what you mean. That's how it always gets. Like, ooh, that modding just sucks up all your playing time.
Yeah, Every time I start a game, I'm too much tempted to open the world builder and change something, to cheat.
That's funny. You can't. You're addicted to modding. Well, that's what we like on our show: people who are addicted to modding, and you know they get a little crack when they listen to our show, right into their vein.
If you're really hardcore, you mod while listening to Modcast.
Yeah. Yeah, let's get that stuff going.
Double dose.
If anyone who's listening wants to know more about this mod for the board game, you can find it on its site. It's rye.civfanatics.net.
Sweet.
Yeah, we put up all the links, too, on where people can listen to.
And now everyone knows where to go. Rye, it's a big pleasure to have you on the show. And I hope that if you have any new projects, you let me know, because we'll put them on in.
Sure.
And you did excellent.
You know what you should do? You should recruit your physics class to be like your gameplay teacher for you. You know? It's like, today, class, we're going to be playing board games. You know?
Oh, that's funny.
But you see, you can make it a physics board game, so the school department doesn't realize what you're doing. Then it'll be like an educational board game.
We'll call it the rise and fall of physics.
Call in today. In North America, the number is 301-637-7659. That's 301-637-POLY. In Europe, 44-121-288-7659. That's 44-121-288-POLY. You can Skype us at the Polycast or email us at polycast@polyton.net.
The only thing worse than being talked about is not being talked about.
For more information on Modcast or our sibling show Polycast, or about Polycast in general, log on to the series' official website at polycast.apolyton.net.
Oh, but both my Aussies are out of commission today. Officially, they are both drunk because it is the Australian 4th of July, and it's... What do you guys drink that? You drink beer, or what do Australians drink for liquor? Is it like an Australian liquor?
Alcohol.
Anything alcohol, as long as it's beer.
Alcohol.
Okay, so beer is the official liquor of Australia. I'm sure you guys have a heavy concentration of alcohol in your beers.
Oh, absolutely.
Well, John here brews his own, so he can add, you know, alcohol, a little strychnine, whatever it takes.
Well, usually when I do 19 liters worth, it usually comes up around 5.7 to 5.9%, sometimes a bit higher.
That'll get you drunk.
Absolutely.
Especially because there's 19 liters of it.
How long does it take you to get through 19 liters, John?
Maybe a week.
Yeah, don't lie, it takes you 2 days.
All right, okay, 2 days.
Rye, so what did you think of the show?
Oh, it was very fun. Thank you for inviting me.
Well, a little known fact to our viewers is I believe the pilot episode 1 of Modcast, which I don't know if anyone's heard, or was it pilot episode 2, but Rye came in and made a brief cameo This is like over a year ago, Rice. You may not remember, but he has been on the show before, sort of.
Oh, I recall. I think I recall. Because I was asked to record like a few words, like welcome to something.
I'm so glad you came onto the show. Please keep up your good work, and we hope to have you on again sometime. As I said, I warned everyone in the beginning to put wax in their ears. Now, we're going to know by now which ones listened to me and which ones didn't. Because the ones that didn't listen to me are probably rolling around on the floor with their eyes rolling up in their heads because we had too much fun.
And beer.
And the ones that did?
The ones that did didn't hear anything I said, so they're okay. All right. Today, we have been joined with John B.T. Oz Archer.
See you later, everyone.
Kenneth Impaler W.R.G. Ferland.
Farewell.
And
live long and prosper.
Tim Rough High Pratt.
Bye bye.
Me, Tony Garrett-Zaki Keel, goodbye. And with our very, very, very special guest co host, Gabriel Rye Traburhu.
Cheers.
We will see you all.
Salute.
We'll see you all in a couple weeks. Goodbye. Record date January 25th, 2009. Sound clips copyright Civilization 4 and the Warlords of Beyond the Sword expansion packs. Copyright 2009, Appolitan Civilization site at appolitan.net.